Can you really have it all? Are your expectations holding you back? Maybe perfectionism is sabotaging your balance. If any of these questions caught your attention, listen in. Today I have with me Cheryl Ann Skolnicki, and she has a nuanced take on balancing ambition, family life, and self-care. We're going to challenge the traditional narrative of success. We're going to learn how to identify and release the weight of societal and personal expectations that might be stifling your growth and your happiness. And we're going to also find out how striving for perfection might be the very thing that's keeping you from living a truly balanced and satisfying life. Y'all, I love doing this interview. I can't wait to share it with you. Let's do this.
Do you want to feel less scattered and more focused, but the idea of goal setting sounds like adding more pressure to your already pressure-filled life? If so, welcome to the Plan Goal Plan podcast. I'm Danielle McGew. I'm a professor, mom, planner addict, and recovering overachiever. After years of hustle and grind, I was tired of trying harder. I was ready to try easier. At the intersection of research, practice, and play, I found a purposeful path to planning and goal setting that is fun, simple, and sustainable. If you're ready to try easier, if you're ready to make memories and do meaningful work, grab a pen. I will equip you with tools and practices to clarify purpose, reclaim time, and achieve goals playfully and lightly. Let's get started.
If you're looking to re-engineer your life so that you can play big at work and at home while protecting restorative time for yourself, grab a pen. You're going to want to take notes on this episode. Today, I'm speaking with Cheryl Ann Skolnicki, an expert on how to ease the tension between women's ambitions and their family lives. She's a perfect guest for today. I'm so excited to have her with us. She is the founder and chief creative officer of Brilliant Balance. She also hosts a podcast by the same name. And, you know, she's been married for 23 years. She has three teenagers. So she is in it. And I am so excited to talk with her about how women can make room for themselves in the middle of their full lives. So welcome. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So tell me a little bit of your story. I want to know, how did you start helping women ease this tension between their ambitions and their family lives?
Well, I think maybe because experience is the best teacher, right? I had to learn these lessons myself before it became clear that maybe I could pay them forward to other people. I'm just like every listener out there, I'm sure, right? Trying to figure out how I was going to have it all because that's what I was promised that I could have. I mean, I grew up as, you know, I was born in the 70s, kind of raised in the 80s, and then grew up and came of age in the 90s. And in that era, what we were telling girls was you can be anything you want to be and you can have it all. And I was bound and determined to go do just that, right? Probably like you, probably like a lot of the women listening. And so that, you know, drinking that Kool-Aid early on and really buying that message hook, line, and sinker without the playbook for what I was supposed to do once I had it all, right, really was starting to take me under. So I'm kind of a classic perfectionistic overachiever, right? That was my deep in my DNA. And so I think my mechanisms for running my life worked until they didn't anymore. And the breaking point for me was really when I was looking at my life with a career and a husband and a house and two cars and three kids and a dog, and, you know, like all of the pieces I was trying to manage. And I realized the long list of work that came with each of those roles, that was the cue that something had to give. And I didn't want to just give up half my life. I didn't want to say, well, I guess I just won't work, because work has always been deeply fulfilling and important to me. And I didn't want to give up the house or the husband or any of the kids. So something was going to have to shift. And I really learned it was more of a problem that was solved in the nuances than it was solved in broad brushstrokes. So that was my own personal journey to figure that out for myself and to reconcile some semblance of balance, dare I say, became the basis for what is today the things that I teach within Brilliant Balance.
That's amazing. I know I can think of a moment. I was probably in my mid-30s at the time, and on paper, I had it all from the outside perspective. But I remember just feeling incredibly flat and deflated and kind of confused about what's next. When you're in your 20s and you're thinking about the house and the dog and all of those things, you don't necessarily think about all of the labor involved in it. And I think you know, at that point I knew, okay, if I go after other things, I understand the commitment and the labor that's going to come with those things. And so how do I decide what's right at that moment in my life? So you said that you determined that there's like these nuances that really help you through this. Can you tell me a little bit about how do you help women juggle all of these things?
I think it's really important that we level set that like it's not easy and I am far from perfect at it, right? If you walked into my house on any given day, I might be feeling really good, like deeply in momentum. I've got this kind of energy, music's playing, you know, sun is shining. Or you might walk in a day where I'm grappling with my own version of self-doubt, where I feel like there's a pile of stuff I can't get to. I think that it's really important that we normalize that there is not a sort of perfect happy ending here where any of us is going to achieve a state of every single day permanently feeling amazing. What I'm interested in, Danielle, is how do we help women know how to get back to that good place so they're not like underwater and staying underwater and then essentially giving up. Like, well, I guess this just is what it is. And I'm going to feel like crap for the next 20 years until I get these kids out of the house. Like, that's not a vision anyone aspires to. So we want to learn how to cycle through it with some grace, with some buoyancy, with some resilience so that we have something to come back to that is like home base that feels pretty good. I think that's a vision that we can sink our teeth into. And what I do with the women that I get to coach inside of our coaching programs is essentially take them through a detailed version of a three-step process. So the first thing that I've learned is really important is that we take care of our own health and well-being. And so I think of that as, I use three R's. I think of this as refresh. And when we refresh our habits, like when we get clear about what are the day in and day out practices that keep us feeling, I always say, healthy, whole, and human, right? It just, that's how I want to feel. And I have a collection of practices that when I do them with consistency, make me feel that way. You probably do too, right? Anyone listening can say, I know what those are. The question is, are you doing, right? Are you doing them with regularity? Are you putting enough time and energy into those? Do they have, is there consistency, in other words, to that collection of practice? And I think that's baseline. It's like table stakes. If we want to be high achieving, growth minded women who are showing up with vibrancy in all the arenas of our lives, where we deserve that. We're going to have some foundational habits that like keep it in cue. Like, what's one of those habits for you?
So one thing that's really important for me is exercise. And then I would also say taking time to journal and do planning.
Fantastic. Yeah. And you know, like you've learned that if you have a week where you don't do one of those two things, you probably feel off your game, right? Like you're smiling and nodding. And so a couple of mine, like I learned in my 30s probably that sleep was on the list for me. Up until then, I think I was a, you know, I'll sleep when I'm dead, thank you very much kind of person. But I really learned that my level of focus was stronger. My mood was more regulated. My productivity was higher if I had enough sleep, right? That's one. Time alone. I'm an only child. I was raised in a household where I had a lot of autonomy over how my time was spent. Now I have three crazy teenagers and a husband and a dog and two cats and, you know, a partridge and a pear tree. And that lifestyle can be very noisy. I have a lot of clients and a team who need things. So I need time alone to not have anyone needing me and just quiet my mind. And that might be 15 minutes in the car, right? But I know I need to steal away and have a little bit of a respite from the noise level. Okay. So when we think about habits, it's not always just diet and exercise, although those come to mind for a lot of people. We really want to understand what are the things that keep us level. So that's the first R. The second R is it takes us more into your wheelhouse, right? Into this space of productivity. Because what I really think about next is that we want to release the weight of expectations, which is the notion that not only are we supposed to be doing all these things, but there's a way we're supposed to do them. And, you know, we all are living in the same soup where we're seeing social media feeds that are perfectly curated, right? It's you have to have the perfect wardrobe. This is the Barbie movie. Like we've all now digested the monologue. So I think it's helpful because now that's so out there that people have really internalized this tightrope that we're walking around exactly how we're expected to manage this very full life, right? So there's a particular way we're supposed to manage our work calendar, a particular way we're supposed to manage our home or our children or a birthday party or whatever it is. And I think that alone is heavy, right? It's a lot to carry all of those tasks, but the weight of the expectations is maybe the heaviest thing. Like the sense that we're chronically feeling like maybe we're doing it. So when I'm working with women on how they're going to use their time, we really have to grapple with this idea of expectations. Because while you may say, I'd like to feed my family dinner every night, the way you do that has a broad range of what could work for your family. And if we're in a very narrow definition of how mom did it or how our sister does it or how, you know, the actress on TV does it, we're not really living in a way that we can put all the pieces together for ourselves. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think there's ways that we've sort of moralized the ways that we do things.
That's a great
right?
insight.
So, you know, it's like, oh, if I do it this way, but Pinterest tells me I need to do it another way, then maybe I'm not a good wife. Maybe I'm not a good mother. Maybe I'm not a good woman. And I think that that can really get into us. I'm shocked sometimes working with clients who have lost a lot of confidence in themselves because they've attempted to try out all of these different systems and ways of doing things related to what you were beginning to talk about at the start, because they don't hit a consistency where it's like, it's all of the time. They think that they're wrong and that, yeah, and that they're failing. And so then they've lost confidence in their ability to even know that, hey, you have the resources within you to do this, and it's okay for you to take this system and to make it yours. And that might mean deviating from some of the right ways of doing things.
That's right. The models. Yeah. The notion, this piece around releasing expectations has its roots in the word permission. I think giving ourselves permission to do things differently than we might see other people around us doing them. That we really are rules followers. Like we are a grown-up generation of good girls who followed the rule. Yeah. And we were rewarded for that, right? That's how you get straight A's. That's how you get to be the, you know, student of the month or whatever we were all chasing when we were kids. When that same ethos grows up, we think, oh, well, the world is expecting me to do it this way. And if I don't, like there's a sort of existential dread about what might happen. But the real magic of this kind of midlife chapter is in figuring out what do you want, right? What would be the right way for you? Instead of saying like, oh, a good mom puts a healthy home-cooked meal on the table every night. Like if you love to cook, fantastic. But it's more like this mom does it this way. And I think that notion of getting to what's right for us is a huge important piece of getting some freedom here that we skip over.
Absolutely. There's so much empowerment when you do give yourself permission to do it your way and you realize nothing bad happened.
It's okay. Exactly. But it's shocking. And I think I have a lot of compassion because it was so hard for me to do that, to release some of those expectations and try another way. A lot of fear bubbles up, right? So then the third R, once we get those things kind of sorted, or at least we get a little bit of movement, the third part is probably the most fun, which is redefining what does it even mean to have it all? Like for you. And I think this is like, my metaphor is always an all-you-can-eat buffet. You know, none of us really want to go to an all-you-can-eat buffet and eat everything. We just don't. Like we know we're going to feel like hot garbage if we pile this plate up with every single thing. What we want to do is have the ability to choose. And
absolutely.
Even when people say like, oh, I'm going to go to this buffet, the exciting thing about it is the choice. And that's really at the essence of having it all, is what we have is the choice to have whatever we want. And more is not always more. Right. So I think a lot of what I'm doing with women by the time we've worked together a little while is crafting a vision for what is it that they want to lean their time and energy and attention into? Where do they want to invest? And what does that give back to them? Right. What's rewarding and satisfying about it? And then also, how do you let go of some of the stuff that is actually not important to you and watch other people have it, celebrating it with them without envy? Right. Because you've already gotten clear, like, yeah, that's not mine. I don't want that thing. I want this collection of the buffet, so to speak, that's there for me.
I love that, because I do think that when we are able to get really clear about what having it all is to us, and we can embrace that with confidence, that it also changes us relationally. How we can show up for other people shifts when we can encounter relationships from a space of security and safety and confidence ourselves. It's really amazing. Also, I love the buffet metaphor. I think about when I was in my 20s, I loved going to a buffet, right? Like, I was like a pile up that plate, like we're going to town. And then you have an experience of eating higher quality food. Yeah. And you realize I'd actually rather go to a restaurant where I get less food, but the food that that's I get really is really amazing. And I think that that's such a great metaphor. And I think that it really shows, you know, as we age, we might go, oh, actually, I can have more discernment.
Yes.
In what it is that I want.
Discernment's the word. Right. It's really, it comes back to choice, that every single thing we're going to do or not do, have or not have, is a choice. It truly is all available. I think that the options are literally limitless. And that's the problem. The problem is we get so much FOMO that we're going to miss something, right? Or we're worried that if we miss on behalf of someone else, right, that can invoke guilt. Or we're worried of what somebody going to think about me if I don't do that. And we're worried about their opinions. Like these kind of the feelings and fears really cloud our judgment around this curation exercise of deciding what we really want to have. So at the end of the day, reminding women that it is, and men, that it is our choice. The only person that has to be really reconciled with the collection of choices we make is us, right? And we actually will be better. We will feel lighter. We will have lives we can manage when we've kind of built that plate, so to speak, in a way that like, yeah, that looks right to me. That looks amazing. And I don't care about these other pieces that I haven't taken enough to put them on my plate and have the whole thing start to get really heavy again. Right? Like there's a cost benefit in every one of those choices.
Absolutely. So do you think that we can have it all then? And I kind of have this question. You have three teenagers. How do you talk to them about have it all? But do you encourage them to have it all? Do you help them find their own version of have it all? I'd love to hear how you navigate that.
Yes. It literally hinges on your definition of the word all. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think you can have everything that matters to you. And again, when I said before, this is a problem that's solved in the nuance. It's in how do you manage it? What is the frequency? So let's just take, for example, you mentioned that you love to exercise and I love to exercise as well. I did not when I was in my teens. And when I came into my 20s, I fell in love with running. And then that's evolved into other things over the years. And when I was in my 20s, I invested a lot of time in running, right? I ran marathons. I ran every day. I ran with groups. I had a social life built around running. It's a huge part of my life. First of all, I don't run today because at this age, my knees have decided they are done with running. And I work out alone, okay? And I work out in my home or close to my home so that I have full discretion around how long the workout is, where it fits into my day. And I have 0 minutes between like I'm ready and I'm exercising. It's just very efficiently fit in there. So that's an example of I didn't have to say, well, exercise no longer matters to me. It does matter to me, but the way I do it is entirely different than it was in a chapter of my life where I had expansive time available volunteering. When I was in my 20s, I could spend a lot of time volunteering. I was on boards and I was regularly a contributor at a number of organizations. When I had children and all three of them were young, I made a choice that my only volunteer work was going to be a 2-for-1 where I was physically with them participating in an activity that was important to them and I was giving my time to that organization, right? So that could be something like you could be a Girl Scout leader or you could be a coach of a kid's team but I was going to get the double benefit. I wasn't going to sit in a boardroom on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock while somebody else is putting my kids to bed in that era of life. So this is what I mean by you can still say exercise, volunteering are important, but how you do it can evolve and shift based on what you're trying to fit into your life in that stage. At these ages, as my kids' lives are becoming more independent and my time is opening up, it's shifting again. You know, I'm able to pick different things. So what am I teaching my kids? I'm talking to them about choosing the things that are important to them and turning down the noise on the social narrative we have that you're never doing enough, right? Oh my gosh, how are you going to get into college if you're not in 72 activities and you don't have an A+ in every AP class? It's just a fallacy. but we've like bought into it as a culture. So I think I'm really standing very solo in trying to tell my kids that, guys, I think we really have to do this a different way. I want them to have downtime. I want them to have time to invest in the hobbies and passions that are important to them. I want them to have time with their family while they still live here. And we have to say no to some things in order to create that, right? Because we don't want to raise another generation that's just more is more. Right. So many opportunities, so many, that learning to make choices is probably the number one skill.
Absolutely. It's so interesting. My kids are just 6 and 8, and we are really clear that we're only going to take on so many activities at once because we really value time as a family. And that while I love watching my kids in activity, I find it way more joyful than I ever imagined just to witness them doing things. I want some time where we're actually interacting and it's not just me like driving them from thing to thing. And I do think that we stick out because of those choices that we make. And it's interesting. So I'm a college professor and I work with young people in their 20s all the time. And I'll tell you, I'm actually really impressed by applications when students are expressing that they decided very intentionally to focus on a few things. I find that impressive because I'm dealing with a lot of students that are struggling with burnout already in their 20s.
Yes.
And I don't want to see that. But I also recognize as a professional, as somebody that, you know, works with college age students, I can't teach beyond what I do.
That's right.
So that if I don't have a healthy relationship to work, if I don't have healthy boundaries, if I'm not modeling, you know, many of the things that you're talking about, like how do we make self-care essential, not extra? If I can't demonstrate that for my students, I'm not going to create another generation of people that are healthy.
That's right. And I think that generation that is currently sitting in universities lost the generation of role models because we are the generation of parents who were trying to figure this out. We kept saying, oh my gosh, yes, another thing I can do, please let me just keep filling my arms, right? With this like massive pile of things I could have. If you look at just the social media narrative, we are like throwing our hands up at, oh, look at what a mess it is. Look at what, well, that's nothing to aspire to. You know, these young women are not going to say, oh, I aspire to that. So you're getting this correction back of like, well, I don't want to work as much. I don't need as much money. I don't want, like, there's this kind of like pendulum correction back. And I think we have to give them a better model. We just owe it to them to say, like, we're going to figure this out still for ourselves in a way where we make intentional choices. I want to circle back, Danielle, to the idea of expectations, because there are these like root systems that drive some of this noise, some of this craziness. So you were talking about kids' activities. I think if we look at the world of like club sports and what club sports do to a family in terms of the amount of time, and I admittedly, I have a child in club sports and I have two that were not. Okay. When you look at the time investment that you are putting in as a family, so the practice schedule, the travel schedule, the tournament schedule, the year-round nature of that sport, right? Or multi-sport athletes as just two really glaring examples of how much of a family takeover this is. Not just that kiddo, but the whole family is involved in, now we're all traveling to or sitting on these sidelines or going back and forth to these practices. We really have to look at that as a systemic challenge. Because your option for people like you and me is to opt out, to say, absolutely, well, my kid's not going to participate because there isn't a third option, right? So, and I think there's just so many of the activities have like amped up the level of all consumingness. And what we're getting in the adult generation is volunteerism is down, right? Why? Because the parents are all involved in transporting their children to these activities. So there isn't the space available to like lean into supporting churches and volunteer organizations because the parents are tied up. Another root cause, homework culture, you know, the level of homework. Yes, you have 6 and an 8-year-old, right? I bet they already have homework.
It was so surprised me because I just didn't know. And we get so many things sent home. I'm actually really grateful for my daughter's kindergarten teacher because she recognized that we were so oversaturated that if she would just send a couple of things home a week, we were more likely to follow through on it. But we were getting, 5 to 7 sheets a day for a kindergartner.
And then it just amplifies, because then by the time you get to high school and you have, not only are they in school, but then they're in an after school activity or sport until 5. And then they get home from that at 5:30. And if they have a game, my daughter got home from a game the other night at like 9, right? So by the time they're home for the first time, then they're unpacking the homework, which could be several hours worth of work. So we're teaching them that what's Absolutely. Normal is you leave your house at 7 a.m. You don't get home until between 5 and 9, depending on what your, you know, expectations are. And then you have several more hours of work to do. Well, what does that sound like? It sounds exactly like what these, you know, women our age are doing, where they're going to work, running around doing family stuff, and then trying to get back online to finish the work. So it's somewhere in this system we have to break these expectations and reset. Like, what is enough? What is enough learning to do in a day? What is enough work to produce in a day? What is enough time invested in a hobby or an activity that we get some semblance of like cadence back in our life and rhythm? And that's, I think, what we're lacking. We're just like pedal to the metal all day, every day. And it does require courage to make an alternate choice in the culture we're in right now.
Absolutely. And I want to connect with people. I want to have time to connect with my kids. I want my kids to have time to really connect with their friends, just not to connect through the activity. I want them to be able to connect, have meaningful relationships. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All of this is really, really resonating with me and my experience. And I have no doubt that it's connecting to my listeners as well. So if my listeners wanted to connect with you, how could they do that?
So one great way to do it is by listening to my podcast. If you listen to this podcast, you might like another one. The best place to go, I curated a little list of kind of our top podcasts. So if they go to brilliant-balance.com/playlist, that is a curated collection of episodes. And then of course you can get to the podcast anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Just search Brilliant Balance. You'll find it. The website has a lot of other stuff happening, but that's a good starting point. If the things I said today were resonating, I think you'll get a good collection of episodes there.
I'm excited. I think I'm going to have to hit follow and subscribe and check it out. You. I'm really excited for the things that you're talking about. So thank you so much. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom with us.
Thanks for having me.
If this podcast has inspired you, guided you, or just made you laugh, the number one way that you can thank me is by leaving a written review for the show over on Apple Podcast. I'm seriously tickled every time that I hear from you all, so pop onto Instagram and follow Plan Go Plan and digital message me. I want to say hello. I want to geek out about all things planning and goal setting. Keep sensing the possibilities, y'all.